This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 1205. It's great to have you with us for the Monday edition of the Noon Business Hour as another trading week is underway. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And for Chris Kreidel, I'm Jim Gutis. It's a gorgeous day in Chicago. We're heading up to a high of 72, though a little cooler by the lake. Right now, under partly sunny skies, 63 at O'Hare.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by Old Second Bank. Let's kick things off with an update of Wall Street. At Bloomberg, here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco and Jim, Boeing's plan to cut 737 production is rippling through the aerospace industry and Wall Street. Almost all of the Dow's 126-point loss is due to Boeing's decline, Boeing shares sinking more than 4.5%. NASDAQ is lower by 9 points, S&P down 5. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index is down about 0.2%. We've seen Boeing suppliers also getting hard hit by Boeing's move to cut that production by 19%. It's been slow going this year for American manufacturers as they contend with slower economic growth and tariffs. New data show factory orders dropped 0.5% in February after showing no change in January. And home prices have been moderating. A New York Fed survey indicates the trend will continue. It shows Americans anticipate home prices will rise 3% over the next 12 months, tying the smallest anticipated gain since 2013. Back to you, Cisco and Jim.
We'll take a look at jobs, trade, and the week ahead, as well as the economy, and we'll find out why it's been so painful at the pump lately.
Get some analysis of the Pinterest IPO. Also, the retirement questions. What are the big ones out there? What's number one? What's on people's minds? And Stock Picker Monday, an investing pro will join us to give you some advice for your portfolio. All of that and loads more on today's Noon Business Hour.
Loaning useful information each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Oil prices have been on a steady rise this year. We'll see what's down the road for oil in our next segment. Right now, the latest tally of factory orders is out today, while the week ahead includes a key measure of inflation. We're joined by Diane Swonk, chief economist at Grant Thornton here in Chicago. Diane, I want to begin by asking you about trade and China and a deal. We, for several weeks now, have just kept hearing, hey, a deal is close. It looks like this is going to get done, and yet we have no deal. Are we still optimistic we're going to get something done here?
Well, the question is, what kind of deal gets done? I think we will get some kind of a deal. The problem is reinforcement and trying to make China adhere to whatever it is that we'd like them to do. It means that we literally could entrench and institutionalize trade wars, because the threat and the risk that China will violate anything that we impose on them is pretty high, and then we'll see yet another round of tariffs. So any temporary ceasefire will be just that, a temporary ceasefire on trade wars from what we get from China. And we really lost an opportunity here. The rest of the world is quite angry with China as well, and there is a power in peer groups, and that's not how we're negotiating this particular trade deal. But the president clearly wants a deal done with China, so something will be done. The question is how permanent it will be and what will be the reaction function when they violate it.
What do you expect the economic impact of a deal if it results in more goods being purchased from the U.S.? Obviously, that means those goods are not being purchased from other countries around the world. So what does it do, I guess, to our economy and then to the global economy?
Well, the real issue is, can China sustain growth? This will help them to get a little bit of a boost as they're trying to stimulate. But they've got major structural problems, which is the larger issue here. Another problem I think that we have to watch for is, even if they temporarily buy something, first of all, many of the soybeans that we wanted them to buy have now spoiled in floods in the Midwest that were in storage containers, and we've seen bankruptcies surge already in reaction to their not buying those soybeans. So even if they pledge to do it, it's not clear we can meet all the orders that they will pledge to. And then, is it just a one-off? The bottom line is, they're a developing economy, we're a developed economy, and if you reduce the bilateral trade agreement with China, as you noted, there will be other repercussions around the world, and then you'll have other places that will have even larger deficits with.
What should we be looking for in terms of the inflation numbers this week, consumer confidence, and the Fed?
Well, the most important things on inflation is, of course, what happens to prices at the pump, which I know you're going to talk about. Those have picked up quite a bit, and so that'll show up in the overall CPI. The question is, will we see much in the underlying inflation pressures? And those have been pretty weak, and that's something that has put the Fed on the sidelines. And I think it will continue to keep the Fed on the sidelines. The Fed is of the view right now that there's nothing to move them in either direction on interest rates. It is worrisome to hear some of the rhetoric of potential nominees of Fed governors on what they would do just to sort of satisfy political whims instead of what's best for the economy. A preemptive cut in rates right now of 50 basis points, which has been suggested by the administration, could actually be one of those unintended consequences of triggering a panic, because it would signal to financial markets who now don't see a rate cut in 2019 as a reason to worry. So I think those are things we need to worry about. On consumer confidence, we've seen a wonderful improvement in the bottom sort of two-thirds of the income distribution, and that's really something that we hadn't seen for a very long time. And those consumers finally at the lower end of the wage scale and into even the middle class are finally starting to see some jobs and at the very low end some wage gains, and that's a broader-based expansion. That's something we welcome.
And with the jobs numbers we saw last week, is there anything very significant in terms of the inflation numbers that we need to keep an eye on?
Well, the issue for inflation is, the Fed is willing to run the economy a little hot. It's been running a little bit cool. And they've been really surprised that we've not gotten more inflation from the wage gains that we've seen. And so that's what's keeping them on the sidelines. And it could allow us to catch up a bit. I think the most important message in the job numbers is we've seen a slowdown. They're still solid. There's still enough to whittle away at unemployment and keep underlying pressure on wages up. I think the month of February, when we had that surge in wages to 3.4%, was more the anomaly than when we saw the 3.2% gain in March. But we are slowing job gains, one, because the economy is slowing from 3% or so to 2% in 2019, but two, because we're literally running out of some workers, and this is an opportunity for finally that 500,000 prime-age, mostly male workers that are still on the sidelines to put their hat in the ring and maybe get a chance at employment.
Diane Swonk, always good insight. Thanks for joining us. Diane is chief economist at Grant Thornton here in Chicago. Coming up, why it's been more painful at the pump lately and what we can expect going forward.
A wallet full of information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The price of oil has risen around 30% in the first quarter of this year. Let's look at the whys and what could be coming down the line with Patrick DeHaan, senior petroleum analyst at GasBuddy.com in Chicago. Patrick, let's start with the whys.
Well, a lot of this, of course, comes off a strong jobs report that has continued in March. Equities markets showing a lot of strength and continued curtailment of production from OPEC, most notably Saudi Arabia, as they continue to discuss an IPO for the state-owned oil company Saudi Aramco, has all really pushed oil prices to a near five-month high at $64 a barrel. Just a lot of bullishness right now with those factors. And, of course, more recently, Libya had been relatively stable, but still kind of a fragile situation now ongoing in Libya.
So with all that and anything else, what can we expect going forward?
Well, I think oil prices will continue to remain bullish. We could see more upward movement in the weeks ahead, and how that's translating down to the retail sector and consumers is that here in Chicago, we've seen gas prices soar about 70 cents a gallon from just 90 days ago. So it is having a tangible and significant impact on us here in the Great Lakes. But of course, we are not seeing the most pain at the pump. That's happening on the West Coast and California due to refinery kinks, something we often mention this time of year. California's state average now up 55 cents in the last month.
Now, when it comes to, this is sort of a more general question, when it comes to urban environments, you're seeing fewer and fewer people driving cars, choosing public transportation, bicycles, that sort of thing, and really urban planners pushing for more of that. Do you think that's going to end up having an impact on oil prices and how much oil we're using, or are we just so thirsty for it that maybe it won't have much of an impact?
Well, it's really interesting seeing so many TIF projects here locally in Chicago, transit-oriented projects. Rail numbers for CTA are up while bus ridership is down. But I don't really see that really taking a huge hit. The Department of Transportation continues to report that vehicle miles traveled, the key metric for how many miles we're traveling as a country, continues to soar. Of course, we haven't really been able to see how rising gas prices in the last 90 days have affected that, but at least in years past, it really hasn't made a big dent. We continue to drive more and more, though, of course, a lot of us commute in. There's still justification for drivers out there to continue with the pedal to the metal in terms of miles driven per year.
Yeah, I guess when we think of oil prices, too, we almost always think of people who are driving. But there's so many other areas in our economy where oil is just a huge issue. Manufacturing, lots of other places where oil is consumed.
That's right. A lot of side effects. You think about being in Chicago, where we have a couple of the big airline companies as well. The rising price of jet fuel may affect them later this year, and that's due to some changes, fuel specification changes that come later this year. But no matter what, I think a lot of us are surprised the bullishness that oil has showed thus far. And of course, OPEC continues to have a pretty tight rope. I think what's most interesting right now is that gas prices are costing Americans now $200 million more today than 90 days ago. There's going to be some sticker shock, I think, in the weeks ahead.
That's Patrick DeHaan, the senior petroleum analyst at GasBuddy.com in Chicago. Still ahead, an update on the markets from Bloomberg, and later, answers to the most asked questions about retirement.
WBBM News Time, 12:25, a check of the markets from Bloomberg. Powered by ComEd's Energy Efficiency Program, here's Elisa Parenti.
Well, Cisco, we have losses, but they are not too substantial. The Dow down 112 points, or 0.4%, to 26,313. NASDAQ off by 3 points, and the S&P is also lower by 3. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is down 0.1%. Boeing shares are sinking almost 5% now. A couple of analysts have downgraded their view of the stock. And, of course, the company faces no shortage of headwinds given the 737 MAX situation. Starbucks stock hit a record on Friday, and now it's pausing, holding close to that level as investors appear to consider where it goes next. UBS says it's going nowhere, that the stock's price already reflects momentum from improved sales and streamlined operations. But it is, again, at a record high. Crude oil futures are gaining up to $64.21 a barrel. Now let's turn to Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
Mixed grain markets today at Chicago Board of Trade. July corn down 2.25, 368 and 3/4. December down 1.5 at 388 and a half. May beans up 3/4, 899 and 3/4. November's up 1/4 at 933. And July wheat down 0.5 at 469 and 1/4. And this is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal.
Thank you, Pete. With business at 25 and 55, live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, I'm Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And for Chris Kreidel, I'm Jim Gutis. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Markets are lower to start the week. We'll see what's worrying Wall Street.
It's Stock Picker Monday. We'll get a couple of ideas from a money pro.
We'll also seek answers to some of the Internet's most searched questions about retirement.
The Cubs hold their home opener at Wrigley this afternoon.
Wall Street, the Dow down 121 points. NASDAQ down 2. S&P down 3. Oil today is up nearly 2%.
It's a beautiful day for a ball game. Mostly sunny. A high of 72 today, but we'll stay in the 60s by the lake. Right now, under partly sunny skies, it's 65 at O'Hare.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by Old Second Bank. Markets starting off the week on a down note. Let's find out what's going on. To talk about it, we're joined by Matt Shapiro, president of MWS Capital here in Chicago. Matt, what do you see going on here at the beginning of the week?
Well, a lot of it, Cisco, is the Boeing effect. Boeing down 4% with the cut in production. Really a reality check. We talked about that just a couple weeks ago, that, you know, it's going to hit the shares, and investors got a little too optimistic at 390. So Boeing down a little bit. But the rest of the market actually kind of coming back when you account for that. On the other hand, of course, we've had a tremendous run, one of the biggest runs in stocks, even bonds, in nearly a generation since the beginning of the year. So we had the buying opportunity. You know, we talked about it endlessly day after day in December. It was very tough. So I think investors are a little bit more price sensitive, and the market's going to meander and wander a little bit till we get some more guidance on first quarter earnings.
Now, you talk about Boeing, and the Dow is down more than the S&P and NASDAQ today. For maybe newer investors who they've heard of the Dow forever, is it good to sort of instruct them, hey, you got to pay attention to some of these broader indexes as well?
Yes, because the way the Dow is constructed, it's price sensitive. Boeing $300 is one of the largest dollar price components, so it has an outsized effect. At the end of the day, it is, Boeing is one of our biggest exporters, industrial exporters in the country. So the 737 story is a really big factor.
What's your thought on the Pinterest IPO?
Yeah, I was just looking through it, just got a notice that investors can participate in it. Kind of this new crop, Lyft came out, did really well, then pulled back. Pinterest, I was looking at the financial, $750 million in revenue, not a lot, with an expected valuation over $10 billion. But at the same time, they're not burning cash like Uber or Lyft. So in these situations, if you like it, I say try it. It's going to be about $17 a share. And the experience has been the pricing has been so fine, so high for these that they've kind of fallen back a little bit to the IPO price. So the reality is, if you're a mutual fund, you ultimately have to buy it where it is. And happily, regular investors can really buy it along with long-term fund owners, probably about where it's going to IPO.
Now, these oftentimes, their initial value is based as much on the sexiness of their name as the actual underlying value of the company. How do you rate Pinterest in that respect?
It's really tough because the biggest lesson over the past decade has been if you sniffed and turned up your nose at these highly valued IPOs, you missed out on the biggest winners. So at this point, investors have been trained to buy them, and then we just see what happens. So in other words, you can struggle in Ford for years and years and GE for years and years, not doing anything. And you might buy Lyft or Pinterest at a high valuation and lose some of your money. But you can also double and triple it, and that's the attraction. So you never quite know. You got to put the team out on the floor. But that's one of the reasons people are so attracted to these hot names.
You touched on Boeing earlier. How tough is it for investors not knowing exactly where this 737 MAX thing is going to go? Is it going to get worse? What are lawsuits going to look like? Is it just a challenge now for investors looking at Boeing, even though it's obviously a really solid company?
Yeah, tremendous demand for aircraft, but I've been, discussing this sort of reality check. Investors want to buy it. It's held at 373. I'd like to see it maybe a little bit lower for an entry point, say 350, 355. I think it's finally kind of sinking in that they do $40 billion a year in 737s. And they're not going out the door anymore. So I think there's going to be a charge against earnings of at least $5 billion. Could be more than that. Certainly the company can absorb that, but I'd wait to see that big charge come out, and then I think in the next 2 or 3 months they'll get the all clear to finally start delivering these planes. But it's going to take a while, and the way things work nowadays with investigations and there's a lot of competition in Europe with Airbus, and getting it certified over in Europe is going to be a challenge.
So for those investors who see, Boeing, it's essentially doubled over the last 2 years. So for investors that were hoping it would dip significantly maybe to get a real deal, you don't see it really going that much lower.
It just hasn't happened. I do think that 350 level is a buy point if it ever gets down there.
Let's talk about Boeing alternatives. If you're thinking about Boeing, but maybe it's not right for you, is there something else out there that maybe you should consider?
Well, the one I've been buying instead of Boeing is a medium-sized company called CAE, Charles Apple Eddy. That's the stock symbol. That's the name of the company. It's a global provider of these aircraft simulators. So one of the things that's going to come up is that the pilots need to be trained ever more. These simulators are $10 to $15 million. CAE owns about 70 to 80% of the high-end simulator market that all pilots globally have to go through. The airlines have to buy them, or the smaller airlines send their pilots to simulator centers in various places around the world. So that's a stock I've been buying. It's about $22 a share, has a PE ratio of about 20. not low in that segment, but they're going to deliver a record number of simulators this quarter.
Matt Shapiro, thanks for the insight. Matt is president of MWS Capital here in Chicago. Up next, need-to-know info for planning retirement.
Cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Google has compiled a list of the most asked questions about retirement. Let's get some of the key answers from Ed Jurtzen, certified financial planner at Mac Investment Securities and past national president of the Financial Planning Association here in Chicago. So, Ed, let's start with some of those big questions that people are asking as they're preparing for retirement.
Well, one of the first ones is, how much do I need to retire? And I think first and foremost, on most people's minds, that is the most important question. How much money do I need to save up? And while that's important, I think one of the more important things is figuring out how much you're going to be spending in retirement.
Because that's the whole determinant, right? You don't really know how much you have to save until you know what your outlay is going to be, and that one answers the other, in a sense.
And that's exactly it. You look at all different people of all different spectrums of life, and they spend money at different rates. And so coming up with one number does sort of a disservice for the rest of the population in regards to a target number that they need to reach. So, yeah, spending is everything in terms of what people should be focusing on.
And that's what people want normally, don't they? I mean, they want, whether it's Googling it or whatever, they want sort of a standard. You need this amount of money, say $1 million. That's been something that's been tossed around for a while. If you have $1 million, you'll be able to retire comfortably. The fact is, it might be different for each person.
Well, and that's exactly it. If you're spending $100,000 a year, $1 million is not going to last that long. Conversely, if you're spending $50,000 a year, that amount of money is going to last that much longer. And that is one of the things definitely within your control is in regards to how much you spend, unlike the lack of control if you would in the stock market or other areas.
Another thing people want to know is, can I retire early? I think people in maybe in jobs they don't like are sitting around Googling that. How do I retire early? What advice would you have to a person asking that?
Yeah, whether it's a person planning for retirement or it's an unintended retiree, the challenge is there's a plethora of challenges, one of which is healthcare, right? So those who want to retire before age 65, healthcare and getting medical insurance isn't inexpensive. So those who want to retire early need to do a lot of planning in regards to sort of forecasting, again, a lot of their spending.
Ed, what's the question that you wish more of your clients were asking about their retirement?
Well, I think the number one question is, I would love to retire the word retirement and use the word, let's say, financial independence. Because when people think about retirement, especially those under the age of 35, they think of someone on a porch in a rocking chair. So that just means financial independence means being able to do something that you actually want to do. So I try to reframe that conversation with people to sort of look at the more positive view of, you know, being retired or financial independence rather than some of the struggles that come along with it.
And does that include shifting your focus in terms of, as you say, not thinking of retirement as sitting on a porch and doing nothing, but maybe instead of thinking it as just leaving work, but maybe transitioning into a different kind of work that allows you to maintain more financial independence and keep a stream of income coming in?
Yeah, it's an excellent question. So recent Gallup poll, 2/3 of Americans really don't like their job, which means that if you have an ability to reach a stage where you can get financial independence, maybe you'll actually look to do something and engage in something that you feel is worthwhile and, to your point, pays income.
Thanks so much for joining us, Ed Jurtzen, certified financial planner, Mac Investment Securities, also past national president of the Financial Planning Association based here in Chicago. At this time tomorrow, it's Travel Tuesday. Still to come, our Monday Stock Picker.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Stock Picker Monday here on the Noon Business Hour, helping us out with a pair of ideas this afternoon. John Beaver, president of Phase 3 Advisory Services, also registered principal with Royal Alliance Associates in Buffalo Grove, based in Buffalo Grove. John, thanks for being with us. What's your first pick?
Well, I'm turning a little cautious here, and so I'm looking for stocks that could help in a soft market. So with that, I have a paradox of fast food and cancer immune therapy on the fast food side, McDonald's, the poster child. Now, technically, it broke out of a triple top wedge. Friday's close was a hair above the all-time high close, and the stock opened up this morning while the market opened down. So, and it also traded better than the market in the fourth quarter, down less than the S&P 500. So it may be a good stock to own here if we get a little soft. Dividend yield, 2.4%.
Yeah, talk about that dividend, because is that one of the things that really makes McDonald's attractive?
It is. It's one of the things that makes it attractive. That dividend has increased about 6% annually over the last couple of years. And in addition, they are the poster child for fast food, so their key is they have to deliver fast. And they've started to introduce these kiosks that they've actually had in Europe for quite a while, but they're starting to come here, especially to the Chicago market. And I think they're doing well with bringing in that technology, especially since they've been forced to raise some wages.
All right, McDonald's, the main course today. What's dessert?
Dessert, cancer immune therapy with Xiopharm Oncology. Now, this is speculative. This is a small company, market cap $720 million. They're a clinical stage company, which means they're not to market with treatment yet, but they're developing the next generation of gene therapies for cancer treatment. Very exciting. They use the body's own immune system to find and destroy cancer cells, and unlike chemo, only the cancer cells. For the docs out there, they're doing this in a non-viral approach, so non-viral modification of CAR T cells and TCRs, and in less than 2 weeks, they're able to engineer and culture your body's own T cells to fight your cancer as it is expressed in your body. Really exciting stuff. I recommend going to the company's website and looking at the video presentations because it is technical.
And that's interesting, too, because this could potentially be a huge payout, but until they've actually finished the work and proven the concept, it's still a bit of a, you know, risky bet here.
Oh, it is. And they've just received fast track designation for the treatment of recurring glioblastoma. That's brain cancer that comes back. Almost no one survives this. Very difficult. But in their phase one trial of this, they treated over 75 patients demonstrating both safety and efficacy. So when that finishes, and possibly even before it finishes, there may be some information that comes out. Dr. Lawrence Cooper is leading the company, and Dr. Steven Rosenberg, who is of the National Cancer Institute, is actually running the study with the recurring glioblastoma. And he has a habit of giving some information along the way that might be very interesting. But again, it is speculative, so I wouldn't commit a lot of money to it.
Two picks today, McDonald's and Xiopharm. Thanks for being with us. John Beaver, president of Phase 3 Advisory Services. We'll get an update on the markets from Bloomberg as there's a little turnaround underway.
WBBM News Time, 12:55, with a live look at the market, sponsored by Baird. We go to Bloomberg and Elisa Peretti.
Jim, we continue to see losses for the blue chips. They're lower by 114 points or 0.4%. All of the losses there due to Boeing, which is sinking almost 5%. That is the reason why the Dow has been held lower. The level is 26,311. The NASDAQ has turned positive. It's up 1 point, and the S&P's losses cut to just 2. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is unchanged. Last night's pay-per-view, WrestleMania, is one for WWE's record books in a couple of ways. It was the Wrestle organization's second biggest moneymaker ever, bringing in nearly $17 million, and it was the first to feature women and only women in the main event. Pinterest is on the road this week to drum up interest in its IPO next week. It's planning to price its stock between $15 and $17 and capitalize on a flurry of tech companies going public this year. Lyft has been the biggest so far. It has been trading below its $72 debut price. Crude oil futures continue to gain, up more than 2% to $64.43. With Business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.